How many of you, by show of hands, are 100% completely and totally comfortable with calling yourself a leader? Overwhelming. Excellent. Don't worry about it, because I've asked that question to every audience I've spoken to for the last 3 years. Everywhere I ask it, that happens. I've asked it over 300 times, 22 times more than 30% of the audience has raised their hands. Only 22 times. Of those 22 times, 15 of them were children under the age of 10. There is something about the term that makes us uncomfortable. There's something about the term leadership that people act like we need permission to use it. Like, one day you hope you get a job or a business card that when people look at it, they go, nice, leader. But to just use the title on our own without somebody giving us permission to use it, what I've discovered in my research is that most people say they're worried that makes them look cocky and arrogant. So people don't put their hands up. And now all the people who did were like, oh, did I just look cocky and arrogant? Instead, I think what's happened is we made leadership into something bigger than us. We make leadership into something beyond us. And we make leadership about changing the world. And what we say is that if what I do doesn't change the world, if it's not big enough, what actually happens is that I have no right to use the title. And what I worry about is that we spend so much time in our society celebrating amazing things that hardly anyone can do. What we've done is we've convinced ourselves that those are the only things we're celebrating. And we say, look at these giants. Look at Steve Jobs innovate. Look at Bill Gates and Warren Buffett invest. Look at Madonna perform. Look at Tiger Woods used to play golf. And we say, those are the giants. And if we don't play at that same level, to call ourselves leaders as well actually makes us look foolish. What I believe is that when we choose to look at leadership that way, what happens is we actually devalue the leadership that we actually demonstrate every day. And we let moments of leadership pass us by, and we don't let ourselves take credit for them, and we don't let ourselves feel good about them. The things that human beings decide on their own that they want to do most often are the things that make us feel good. So when we let moments of leadership pass by and we don't let ourselves take credit for them, and we let our friends and the people we love and the people we work with let leadership pass by and we don't make sure that they get to take credit for it, what we're doing is we're pulling leadership out of our lives, we're pulling it out of our world, and I think that we need it. So for 15 years, I've gotten to work with these amazing people who helped me redefine what leadership means to me. And I want to share with you the story of that redefinition in the hope that it resonates with those of you who didn't raise your hand and the ones who it did as well. And I want to start with a story that I tell everywhere I go. And when I left I went to a little tiny university on the east coast of Canada called Mount Allison University. None of you have heard of it. It's in a place called Sackville, New Brunswick, which is exciting as it sounds. And I was there for 7 years. And on the last day that I was there, they threw me a goodbye party, and this young woman walked up to me, and she said, Drew, I remember the first time that I ever met you. And I said, oh, great. No idea who she was. And don't you love it when people use your name and you have no idea who they are? So you cover it up. Thanks, kiddo. She shakes her head and goes, look. And she told me a story from 4 years earlier. And she said, 4 years ago was the night before I started university. And I was in a hotel room with my mom and my dad. And for whatever reason, the night before, I just got overwhelmed with this feeling like I couldn't do this. I wasn't ready for it. And she goes, so I started to cry. It was really, really intense. And my parents hadn't seen me cry in 8 years. But I was in a hotel room, and there was nowhere to hide. And they were amazing. They said, look, we know you were scared. Trust us. We are way more scared than you are. But you've worked so hard for this. Like, you owe it to yourself. You've always wanted to do this. Let's go tomorrow to the first day. And if at any point in the day you feel like you can't do this, just tell us. We'll take you home. We love you no matter what. And she said they were right. My whole life I had been told you got to go to university. It's what successful people do. And so I'd killed myself for that. So I said, let's go. And I got in line on the first day, and it was so loud, and everybody was screaming and cheering, and they had stupid face paint on, and they were doing this weird pelvic thrust thing that I really wasn't totally comfortable with. And she goes, I've never been an extrovert. And I looked around, I said, here I am again at a place where only extroverts are valued. And she said, I can't do this again. And she goes, I quit. Standing in line, I quit. And as soon as I did, I was overcome with this incredible feeling of peace. Like, I am so okay with that decision. And I turned to my mom and my dad to tell them to take me home like they said they would. And before I could say anything, you came out of the nearest building wearing the stupidest hat I have ever seen a human being wear in my life. I know. It's like this Franken fedora here, which is two of them stitched together. And she says, you had this giant sign that said, Shinerama, Students Fighting Cystic Fibrosis, which is a charity I've been involved with for years. And you had a giant bucket full of lollipops. And you're walking along, and you're handing lollipops out to the people in line to their parents and to students, trying to get them to do Shinarama. And all of a sudden, you got to me and you stopped and you stared at me. She won't look. It was creepy. This girl knows exactly what I'm talking about. But then you looked at the guy next to me, and you pull a lollipop out of your bucket, and you hold it out to this guy, and you go, dude, you have got to give a lollipop to the beautiful, beautiful girl you are standing next to in line. Do not miss this chance. Come on, man. She goes, I've never seen this dude before in my life, but I have never seen a human being get more embarrassed faster in my life. He turns beet red, and he won't even look at me. He just does this. And I felt so bad for this guy that I take the lollipop from him. And as soon as I do, you get this really, really mean look on your face. And you turn to my parents to be played in a bold casting decision by you two. And you go, look at your little girl. Look at your daughter. It is her first day away from home. Her first day without mom and dad to take care of her. And you know what she's doing already? She is taking candy from a complete and total stranger. She goes, everybody loses it in 20 feet in every direction. Everybody starts to howl. She goes, I don't know why, but in that moment when everybody was over laughing, like I don't know if you've ever been super stressed and someone says something mildly amusing and you lose it. She's like, everyone was doing that. But in that moment, I changed my mind and I didn't leave. And you know, I haven't talked to you once in the 4 years since that day, but I heard that you were leaving. And before that happened, I had to come up to you and tell you, you have been an incredibly important person in my life and I'm really going to miss you. So good luck, all right? And she walks off. And I have no concept of how to process that conversation. So I'm standing there stunned, and she gets about 6 feet away, and she comes back, and she goes, there's one more thing that you should probably know. I've been dating that guy for 4 years since that day. Oh, wait. A year and a half after I moved away, they invited me to their wedding. She married the dude. Good luck. But here's the kicker. I don't remember that. I have no recollection of that moment. And I've searched my memory banks because I was awesome in that moment, and I would like to remember being that awesome once in my life. But it was such an eye-opener for me to realize that maybe the biggest moment of leadership in my life, like maybe a moment that had a girl walk up to a complete stranger 4 years later, maybe the most powerful impact I'd ever had on another human being was a moment that I didn't even remember. And what it really opened my eyes to is the fact that we spend a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of stress on things that we think will shape how others think of us in a positive way. What I've discovered is the biggest impact that we have on how other people think about us are often the things we're not paying attention to. And what I've discovered is that in my research, when people evaluate themselves as people and as leaders, we tend to focus a tremendous amount on the extraordinary days in our lives. And there are extraordinary days in our lives, days where things happen that don't usually happen. And they can be good. I mean, you can pass something you thought you were going to fail. You can get the job. You can get a raise. You can hook up with the person you want to. All right, these are good, extraordinary days. And then there are negative, extraordinary days, where you fail at something, where you don't get something you thought you deserved, where you hurt somebody that you care about. And we can learn a lot about ourselves from those extraordinary days, and I don't deny that. But what I think we have to remember is that those extraordinary days in our lives are always outnumbered by the everydays in our lives. And I think that the nature and the frequency of extraordinary days in our lives are determined by how we behave in the everydays. But when we decide whether or not we deserve the title of leader, when we evaluate whether or not we're impressive, we take this very small subsample, this tiny little percentage of the days of our lives, and we use them to decide, are we extraordinary? And part of it's how we've been taught. Like, you guys will go to school for 12 weeks, and in some of your classes, your marks will be determined by 2 midterms and a final. All right, all that work, 3 big days. Guess what? The problem is we spend the rest of our lives evaluating ourselves in the same way. It's not the sum total of the work we do. It's how we perform on those very rare few days. And after 20 years of being evaluated that way, is it really a surprise that we keep doing it? But what I've discovered is that the most successful leaders I know, the most extraordinary organizations, are the ones that put a tremendous amount of focus on everyday leadership, how you behave in those everyday moments. There's an old adage that says, you're only as good as you are when nobody is watching. I change it. You're only as good as you are when no one's watching, because somebody's always watching. And that's what that girl showed me. What I want to talk about today is how to change the world by hardly changing. I want to talk about if the most successful leaders I know tend to focus on everyday leadership, they make sure that it's acknowledged, that it's fostered, and that it's rewarded. All of the people who do that effectively tend to do a certain number of things. I want to share with you what those things are. I also call it Untitled for Everyday Leadership because I'm addicted to the work of a guy named Seth Godin. And I was on an interview with him once, and he said, never, ever trust anybody who gives you a list of tips. And so I had to change the damn title of my presentation. So now it is definitely not tips for everyday leadership. But these are the things that I find the most powerful leaders do on a consistent basis. The first thing is they screw the list. This is a woman by the name of Allison Elwood on the left. Allison, I brought her in to speak when I worked at the University of Toronto. I brought her in to speak to my first and second year students in the leadership development program because she biked from Victoria, British Columbia to Cape Spear, Newfoundland. She took 5 months and rode her bike all the way across the country to collect the stories of women who had battled and beaten breast cancer because she said that that story is the story of our time. And her mother had become a part of that story. And she said, when my mother heard the stories of other women who had beaten this disease, it gave her hope, and I think that those stories saved her life. So what I want to do is make sure that every woman in this country who's diagnosed with breast cancer, and it's 1 in 5 Canadian women, has the chance to share those stories like my mom did and feel that same sort of hope. So she said, I'm going to bike across Canada, and she did it. She took 5 months out of her life and had these extraordinary adventures. And I said, come in and tell my students this. So she came in and she told this story. And as she's telling it, I'm watching her become, in the eyes of my students, exactly what she is, which is an amazing woman to look up to admire, to emulate, until the very end of the presentation. Because at the very end of the presentation, one of my students puts up their hand and asks the only question that sometimes I think U of T students care about. What university did you go to? And Allison, to her enduring credit, laughs and goes, a better question would be, what university didn't I go to? I dropped out 4 times. She goes, look, I was told university was about freedom, about exploring yourself and discovering new things. On the first day I went to school, I had 4 different professors give me a double-sided sheet of paper. And on it was exactly what I had to do, how many words I had to do it, how big my margins could be, how big my font was allowed to be, when they expected it, and what happened to me if I didn't give it to them on time. And she said, I did not see any freedom on any of those sheets of paper. So I left. And then I went back to college. Had the same thing happen. I kept going back to schools because that's what I was told to do. Everyone was like, okay, well, you're going to go back, right? Because otherwise you're detonating your life. So she goes, 4 times, finally I found a place that actually made me feel like I could explore who I was. She got 2 degrees. She goes, but yeah, better question would be, where didn't I go to school? I dropped out 4 times. And the response to that answer is one I will never forget because my students looked at her like she had 2 heads. Like, they looked at her as if she had done something wrong. After her telling this story, my students looked at her like they were disappointed in her. And I will never forget that. And I realized at that moment how extraordinarily powerful the list is. And it is a list that exists in everybody's mind of the things that you think you have to do for you to be a success. It is a list of the things that you think you have to accomplish in your life for you to be a person of worth. It is a list of things you think you have to check off so you have the right to raise your hand or so that you are not a disappointment to anybody. And I think that that list is never explicitly taught, but it is learned. And it can be extraordinarily restricting. And I think the list looks like this. Go to kindergarten and play nice. Go to elementary school and do what the teacher tells you. Go to high school so that you can go to a good university, which usually means do what the teacher tells you. Go to a good university so you can get a big, fat starting salary. Get a big, fat starting salary. Get promoted. Get yourself into a serious long-term relationship, preferably a heterosexual one. Get promoted. Get married. Get promoted. Buy a house. Get promoted. Have kids. Get promoted a couple more times. Make sure that your kids do exactly the same thing. And I watch extraordinary people act like their lives are some sort of giant scavenger hunt, and we are all handed out a card with that list on it at the beginning, and we are told, quick, race to check off as many of these as you possibly can because everyone else is racing with you. So go. And I liked that game because I was really good at it. And I was told very young, Drew, you have the ability to kick the list ass, so we expect that from you. And is there any feeling worse than feeling like somehow you are letting down the people who believe in you? So I killed myself to go through this list. And I was 25 years old, mid-20s, and I was beating myself up one day because I had not completed something on the list in time. I was supposed to have it done by 24. I was now 25. I suck. And for the first time in my life, I looked at this list of things I was using to determine my worth, and I realized I didn't write it. I was living my life according to somebody else's agenda. I do not know what the list of things you are chasing in your life so that you can feel like you are someone of worth. I do not know what the things you believe you have to check off are before you feel like you're not a disappointment to yourself and the people who love you. All I can tell you is this: whatever that list of things you are chasing is, please make sure that you wrote it. Please make sure that it's your list. It's not your parents or your brothers and sisters or your boyfriends or your girlfriends or your professors or what you think society expects from you. Because if you spend your life chasing a list of somebody else's goals, you are always going to feel unfulfilled. And what I love about this woman, Allison, is she had the courage to keep making changes in her life until it was life that she wanted and the life that she deserved. And guess what? You have the right to do that too. As a matter of fact, I think you have an obligation to do it. I think leaders fundamentally do that. The problem is we scare the hell out of you about doing that. Because what we do is we tell thousands of young people every year this one truth. If you just work hard enough, it will all pay off in the end. Okay? If you just work hard enough, it will all pay off in the end. My problem is this. We never tell you how hard is hard enough, do we? And we don't do a very good job helping you figure out what you actually want the payoff in your life to be. And we never tell you when the end will come. So we have these amazing people chasing this undefined goal on this undefined timeline, and it drives people nuts. If you just work hard enough, it will all pay off in the end. Here's the problem. That's an extremely dangerous thing to say. Because I've watched it make thousands of young people like you guys think that what your professors think of you and what your potential future employers think of you is somehow more important than what you think of yourself. And I've watched it make thousands of young people believe that the entire purpose of the educational experience is to figure out what the market wants, learn it, and then turn around and offer it directly back to the market, regardless of whether it has anything to do with what makes you interested, what makes you passionate, and it has anything to do with what you're gifted at. And the worst thing is it tells all of the dancers and the musicians and the singers and the actors and actresses and the entrepreneurs and the change agents in this room and everyone in this room whose brilliance cannot be measured on essays and on tests, it tells all of you that your gifts aren't gifts at all. They're only gifts if one day they could be monetized. Otherwise, they should just be hobbies. And what bothers me is that could not be more true. And I wonder how old people are in our education system before they start to look up and say, wow, I'm not very good at the list. How old people are before they start looking at teachers and going, that teacher thinks that I can't do the things on the list. Are they 7? Are they 8? How different would our society be? How many more people would raise their hands if people stopped doing that to 8-year-olds? There are 4 things that I believe are necessary for more people to raise their hands. 4 truths that I think that will lead to more leaders in this world. And if they resonate with you, share them with other people. And here's those 4 truths. 1, you are way more brilliant than you give yourself credit for. And you're welcome. And you are way more brilliant than the tests that we have to give you allow you to ever show completely. 2, school is the last place that you will spend time in your life where the ability to do well on a test is valued more than the ability to actually do something or help someone or change something. And you will hopefully spend so much more time in your life doing things, helping people, and changing things than you will writing tests, that you owe it to yourself to be as good or better at those things than you are at writing tests when you leave this place. 3, success in leadership cannot be measured by money and by job titles. And straight A's will not get you a direct path to either one of those 2 things. Success in leadership comes from striving to act every day in a way that makes it more likely you'll have a positive impact on your own life and on the lives of other people. And the 4th truth, I think, is this. You should work incredibly hard to make your grades extraordinary. All right, your transcript will open doors for you. Your transcript will kick down doors for you. Your transcript is an incredibly important part of your life. It is not a measure of your worth as a human being. And I am tired of watching extraordinary young people believe that because they are a C student, they are somehow a C person. And if we want to be leaders, I think we got to do 2 things. 1, never allow ourselves to confuse the letters that come on pieces of paper with who we are as human beings. And 2, never allow anyone we care about to allow themselves to be convinced of the same thing. Your grades are an incredibly important part of your life. I do not deny that. But here is what I believe. You should work incredibly hard to make your grades extraordinary. And this is what should be in 15-foot letters on the wall of every educational institution from kindergarten all the way to the end of university. You should work incredibly hard to make your grades extraordinary, and then you should work twice as hard to make sure that they are the least impressive thing about you. Because I honestly believe if you do that, success and leadership is going to follow you all the days of your life. We think that change means failure. We think if we change something in our life, we have to admit to ourselves and everybody watching that we failed. All right, if we change what we study, where we go to school, who we're dating, we feel like what we're saying is, I screwed up the first time. And we have to admit that to everybody watching. Life is an exploration. Leadership is an exploration. There is no exploration without change. Be willing to keep making changes in your life until it's the life that you want and the life that you deserve.